You're listening to PetLifeRadio.com.
Is your pet stressed out? Does your pet need annual vaccines? Which pet is best for a child? Would you know if your dog was in pain? Pet Life Radio presents The Pet Doctor, where you'll learn everything about keeping your pet healthy and happy. From pet care, pet meds and grooming, to pet food, pet insurance and dental care, this is the place to find out everything there is to know about pet wellness. Whether you have a dog, cat, reptile, or rabbit, you'll find answers for your pets straight from the vets, because it's your pet. Health matters. Please welcome your Pet Doctor host, veterinary media consultant and veterinarian, Dr. Bernadine Cruz.
They've been called aloof, standoffish, picky, cautious, and untrainable. In reality, the pet that more Americans share their home with, Felis catus, the domestic cat, more commonly and sometimes tragically, is misunderstood. To help us decode some of their seemingly mysterious behaviors is my guest, Dr. Jane Brunt. She's executive director of the Catalyst Council. We'll be right back after this short break.
Please have a seat in the waiting room. The doctor will be with you shortly, right after these messages.
It's dinner time in America, where more pet parents trust PetSmart for natural and expert-recommended foods than any place else. And now, we've added more than 100 new varieties to our already wide selection of your favorite brands, like Simply Nourish, Authority, Wellness, Science Diet, and more. Do what's best for your pet. At PetSmart, happiness in store.
Go to PetSmartDeal.com to find out this week's coupon code and save up to 30% on food, treats, toys, and more. And get free shipping on orders of $49. Go to PetSmartDeal.com, PetSmartDeal.com.
Pet Life Radio, the number one pet radio network on the planet, joins forces with iHeartRadio to put the power of your pets in your pocket.
Awesome.
Download the iHeartRadio app and rock Pet Life Radio on your phone, on your tablet, on your Xbox, in your car. Pet talk, pet tunes, and fun pet times. Pet Life Radio and iHeartRadio. Positively possum.
Let's talk pets on PetLifeRadio.com. Welcome back to The Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio with Dr. Bernadine Cruz. The doctor is in, and we'll see you now.
Dr. Jane, thank you so much for being with us. You always have fascinating information.
It is my pleasure to be here, Dr. Cruz. Thank you so much.
And I have a feeling I'm going to learn a lot about my three cats, because there's certain things they do, and even though I've been a veterinarian for over 20 years, I look at them going, what? And clients are always coming in with their cats and telling me things they're doing. It's like, really? I never would have thought of that one. So how common are behavioral problems in cats?
Well, they are common, or they're not uncommon. And behavioral problems, it's really important to sort out what's truly behavioral and what might have a medical physiological problem underneath it. And of course, the more we learn about behavioral science and the biochemistry of behavior, there's not a clear separation. So it's really crucial. The thing that I'll stress so much is to keep your veterinarian involved whenever you're having what you perceive as a behavioral or a cat acting out problem at home. Contact your veterinarian for sure.
Probably one of the most common ones, you're right, that people bring their cat in for is inappropriate urination. They're peeing in the sink. They're spraying by the window. They're urinating on the owner while in bed. That's always a very tacky one. And they're thinking, you know, well, this cat is just being naughty. You know, I've been working more, and that's why this cat is doing what it's doing. What's your response to something like that? Is that cat just being naughty?
Well, that is a common misperception. And another one that you and I hear probably a lot is she's doing it out of spite, which is along the same lines. And what's critical for a person to understand is what's normal for a cat. And you mentioned that they're Felis catus, and they're not they're not dogs. So when we try and project dog behavior and dog normal outcomes and normal actions on cats, that's when we sort of get in this spiral and try and put dog or even human attributes to cats. They're cats. And one of the most fascinating things, if you can keep this foundation in mind, cats are one of the very few species that are both hunted and hunters. They're prey and predators. So if you have that in mind, then everything that you do for cats, providing for them in your home, and we'll talk about that, and what kinds of outlets to have for them, what resources to provide, keeping in mind that they are both predators and preyed upon, will help you make those decisions.
That must make it very confusing for them. Now, what am I supposed to do? Chase it or run?
Exactly. And sometimes they do both. But that becomes important, for example, in this whole litter box placement and understanding, thinking like a cat, because, well, first of all, cats are, you know, they like to, because they're preyed upon, they want to cover their excrement. So that's why we're accustomed to putting litter in litter boxes, and they cover it sometimes. And we put the litter box in the corner of a room or a closet, and the cat doesn't have an escape route in that closet. So, I don't know that I want to go in there, the cat might say, because something bad happened near the door. The dog is guarding the steps down to the basement. So that becomes sort of a preventative aspect on where you place that litter box. But we're getting ahead of ourselves. I mean, the whole, yes, inappropriate elimination, particularly inappropriate urination, peeing outside of the box, is a common and often frustrating problem. So just kind of two thoughts on that. The earlier it's understood and addressed, the better, because underlying that, not using the litter box, there could be a medical problem. For example, we commonly see cats that have crystals in their urine, and that's irritating, and they might have to go sometime when there's not a litter box around, so they'll squat on your clothing or a piece of paper or the bathtub, and sometimes you'll get a clue where there's a little red tinge to it, but oftentimes you won't, and someone might misinterpret that medical problem of having kidney stones, bladder stones, crystals as a behavioral problem. So the earlier that is looked into by your veterinarian, the better for your cat, because you treat that very, very differently.
And that's so important. You're exactly right. And sometimes people being aware of what their pets are doing, when a cat comes into me and the presenting complaint is elimination issues, peeing outside of the box. You know, I'll start asking questions that people will think have nothing to do with why this cat is peeing out of the box. Like, well, how many boxes do you have? You know, where are they located? How do your pets get along? By the way, how often do you clean the box? And so many times they'll say, oh, yes, you know, I clean it out, scoop it out once a week. It's like, really?
Oh, really?
So if you had a bathroom and you flushed your toilet once a week, would you want to use it? And you see their little light bulbs go off and their brains going, oh, I never thought of it. And there are some cats where that box, I'm sure you've seen it too, Dr. Brunt, where the cat box floweth over with excrement and the cat kind of perches on the corner and still says, okay, I'm going to be a good kitty and I'll go in this box even though I really prefer not to.
Yeah. The porta potty syndrome. And Dr. Cruz, you bring up such an excellent point, is that you're asking questions. And it's really easy to jump into the, how do you fix it? What's wrong with my cat? And veterinarians, we sometimes do that. But asking the questions so that you get an idea of what the circumstances are in the house. How many other pets are in your house? Where do they go? And that information then, with an informed veterinarian and a pet owner that's really committed, you're going to be able to solve that situation for sure.
You go to the pet stores or you go online, and you brought it up earlier, Dr. Brunt, of being in the closet, being someplace, you know, closed. And some cats, you know, have closed litter boxes and love them. Mm-hmm. Some seem to like an open box. And I know cats, I love them dearly, but they each seem to have their own unique personalities. As a generalization, can you say open box, closed box, what seems to be the favored amongst cats? Not people, but cats.
Yes, and they are all individuals. That holds true not only for this kind of situation, but all situations with cats, that different ones react differently. Some that like to be more private might prefer a hood. The thing that's critical, though, is that hoods tend to retain the odor and retain and not provide for an escape route. So as a general rule, we recommend not hooded, unhooded. High sides, probably, if you're worried about the litter being flung over. Of course, we'd make an exception for cats, older cats with arthritis that have trouble getting in a high-sided box, but there are ways around that too. But generally, we recommend not to have a hooded box, and certainly not ones that have those flappy covers. That said, there are individuals that will go right in them, or you've seen the furniture online. You mentioned about purchasing things online, and they have all of these cool cat-looking cat furniture where you can conceal the litter box, and the cat goes through this escape hatch or up and down around a ramp inside the box to get to the litter box. And some cats that works great for. If you want to invest in something like that, at the first sign of not using the litter box, man, I'd get it out in the open so fast.
And after you've just spent $42.95 because you saw it when you were flying someplace on the plane, yes.
At least.
All right, quickly on litter boxes, type of litter. Again, you go to the pet store and you see all these various litters, some that are little crystals and absorb all the urine, and some that are biodegradable and made out of walnut shells. And then you have scented and unscented, and I look at litters going, oh my goodness, what's going to be the best one out there? Your opinion and that of Catalyst?
Right. As a veterinarian, I typically recommend our cat owners use clumping litter, and it simulates the sand. That's what they prefer in the wild. And the other advantage of the clumping litter is that it makes urine ball clumps, so that you can actually scoop out the whole urine clump and then manage, get an idea of how big that urine clump is, if it seems too small or too large. So that gives owners a clue that there might be something going on, something amiss. So that's why we like the clumping litter. That said, there are all of those types of litters out there because some cats have other preferences. And when we're working through an inappropriate elimination situation and we've ruled out all of the common medical problems underlying it, we're really, if we're looking at type, location, and placement and kind of litter, I always recommend, let's try another litter, but don't just swap it out. Add a new box that has a different kind of litter in it and let the cat decide. And very quickly, you're going to find out if there's a preference for the clumping shells or pines or crystals or even clay litter, the old traditional clay litter, that you just have to clean more often. The other thing that some cats do, I have one cat that prefers to go in an empty pan. Go for it. Go for it. So in one of the areas in my home where I have litter box access for my cats, there are two different kinds of litters and four boxes, and one of them is empty in one of my locations. So they seem to be happy with that, and one of them needs some high side, so it's all about going with the flow, so to speak.
Oh, very good pun.
And that's what we try to do. But the important thing for listeners and cat owners to realize is that's probably not just one box. It's boxes in multiple locations, so the cat has a choice. Placing them in places that aren't scary, like, oh, the basement next to the furnace, or the dryer that has a buzzer that goes off when the laundry's completed? I don't think so. That could scare the cat and it might not want to go back there. An escape route, because if it feels like it doesn't want to go in there because it can't get out, it's stuck once it gets in there because something bad happened one time, then that's less desirable. So think like a cat. It can be hunted. And so let it have an escape route. Let it have access, easy access, and an escape route.
All right. Another one that cats do too frequently, and oftentimes people think, I know, I'm going to declaw my cat times four because the cat is scratching on the furniture or launching itself off the back of my leather couch and is just damaging everything. Decline is such a controversial problem and issue, and there are ways around it. So why do cats scratch, number one, besides it feels good?
Sure. Well, it's normal behavior, and I'll just back up a minute, because people, I think less more so now than when you and I first started our careers, people thought that, oh, I need to get her spayed and declawed, and declawing is just not a necessary procedure, and knowing how to manage cat's claws is, can do that from the beginning. It's just not the least bit destructive. So trimming their nails every 2 weeks and keeping them short, then they're not going to need to scratch your furniture. Provide them with something better than your leather sofa or the needlepoint stool that grandmother made for you. A scratching post is critical, maybe even more than one, and it needs to be large and sturdy enough so that cats can exhibit their normal behavior, which is marking their environment. And they do that by visual cues with scratching and the scent that they deposit on the things that they're scratching. There's a pheromone, a scent hormone, between that comes from between their toes, and you can't smell it and I can't smell it, but other cats can smell it and presumably other animals, to just know that, hey, that's somebody else's thing. So if you provide a scratching post in a place where the cat wants to say, hey, this is mine, it's going to be able to deposit not only exercise and stretch and mark its appropriate implement in not your sofa, its territory, and it'll be fine. So trimming the nails, offering something better, making sure it's sturdy and tall enough, and try and prevent the scratching from the beginning. I will say that there's been comments lately. We hear that there's a commercial product on the horizon coming soon that's interdigital pheromone in a bottle. And won't it be terrific? So that we'll be able to encourage the cat to go where we want it to go and where it's more appropriate in our mind to go, so that it'll want to go to the scratching post.
And Dr. Jane Brunt, Catalyst Counsel, you also mentioned, you know, want to make sure that it is the right size and it's sturdy, but it also seems that cats really have a preference for the surface. So it might be cardboard, it might be a certain type of rug or cloth or burlap or whatever, but sometimes, just like with litter, you seem to need to try various ones and let the cat decide. It may not blend the best with your house, but the kitty goes, that's nice. This is what I like.
Yes, and once they sort of have it the way they like it, that seems to be where they return. So I'd encourage people, when they have a chair that might have been scratched, if they can, and they want to retire it, if they can take a piece of that fabric and attach it to a scratching post, that would be great, because then the cat will be able to keep its own secure scratching thing. And sure, they have different preferences. Rug, sometimes the looped, though, they don't like that looped thing, so often the jute backing on the back they like to get their claws into. Provide different options. I've got three of those cardboard ones that are corrugated cardboard lined up vertically so that the ridges are visible. And, you know, once they get them the way they like them, and, you know, and you can put them in angled or hanging from a doorknob, which is great, because that way they can do that vertical scratch stretch. But sometimes they just, you know, like them on the floor. And I have them, as do you probably, in different locations in your home. And that's what they're allowed to scratch on. The other thing you can do is make what you don't want. Say you get that new couch to replace the one that might have gotten damaged, or you don't want it to. But initially, make that not scratch friendly. So there are products that you can get that are like giant double stick tape that you can put on it temporarily, and it's tacky when the cat goes up to the surface, or you can use carpet tape, but it's sticky on both sides. The other thing you can do is take aluminum foil and temporarily mold it around those prominent quarters while you're training the cat to the areas that are appropriate. So just provide for their needs and offer them something better than what you have.
great ideas, Dr. Brunt. We're going to take a short break, be right back, and let's talk about something cats really don't seem to appreciate is the trip to someone like you and me, a trip in the car to the veterinarian, how we can make that less stressful. We'll be right back after the short break.
Please have a seat in the waiting room. The doctor will be with you shortly, right after these messages.
Dogs leave fur wherever they go. It collects all over the home. There are many tools designed to stop dog hair spreading, but their effectiveness varies, and afterwards you have to clean the tool, then the floor. With the Dyson Groom Tool, you simply deploy the bristles, then gently brush the coat. Loose fur is removed, while dead skin and allergens are captured by the vacuum. And to clean up, you simply release the trigger.
To get this awesome Dyson Groom Tool, go to DysonDeals.com. That's DysonDeals.com.
Hi, this is Jody Miller-Young from Bark and Swagger. Tune in for everything pet fashion and more, from fashion tips and runway trends, products and designs I love, to fabulous home decor for your furry friend. You'll find it all here. Be the first to discover the new. So what are you waiting for? Find me on Pet Life Radio. And remember, when fierce fashion calls, bark and swagger.
Every week, on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.
Let's talk pets. On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com. Welcome back to The Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio with Dr. Bernadine Cruz. The doctor is in and we'll see you now.
My guest today is Dr. Jane Brunt. She is the executive director of the Catalyst Council. Number one, tell us a little bit about the Catalyst Council.
Oh, absolutely. Our vision is a cat-caring society, and we really are working to connect and collaborate across all channels, across organizations and advocates, as we call them, to collaborate to advance the health and welfare and the value of companion cats. Because, as you said at the outset, cats aren't always, even though they're the most popular companion animal in the U.S., they're not always looked upon as the most favored. So cats. Catalyst Council has been working hard for the past 6+ years to create that change. That's why we're a catalyst.
Very good. Oftentimes people don't want to take their cats to the veterinarian for a couple of reasons. Number one, they see the carrier and they're immediately under the bed. Two, you get them in the car and it's this cacophony of noise from your house to the veterinarian. When it gets there, it doesn't want to come out, and it turns this wonderful, sweet, loving cat into its ancestral tiger relative. So it just is snarls and teeth, and it's like, oh my goodness. And then they think, there's nothing wrong with it because the cat looks absolutely fine. So, Dr. Brunt, debunk all of those. What can we do in 5 minutes or less?
Sure. Well, the whole carrier conundrum, the carrier barrier, as I like to call it, getting cats habituated or used to being in a carrier, I mean, it's just like anything. They need to get used to it. They need to know that it's safe. It's a good place to be. So the best place to start with the carrier is in your home. Leave it out. Leave it open. Cats like to be up high on things. And so put the carrier open on a chair, a sturdy chair, or a sofa. They like warmth. So if there's a way to put it in the sunbeam or have it heated somehow, have that carrier be really comfy, cozy for the cat. And that way it's not going to be so threatening when all of a sudden the carrier comes down from the closet upstairs or in from the garage and they know what that means because they're afraid. So getting over that fearful thing, they don't want to be predated. So that whole no escape route when you close the door and then you take them in the car. You mentioned that when they arrive or on the way, they're like their ancestral tigers. Well, that reaction is because they're fearful and they're afraid. So there are very few cats that are aggressive because they want to be aggressive. They're aggressive because they're afraid. So let's back up. How do we make them not afraid of the carrier? I mentioned leaving it out, leaving it open, up, warm, but also practice. Let the cat go in the carrier. Close the door.
Great idea.
Right there. Give it a treat when it's in there. Open the door. Hey, cool. Nice, Callie. Nice job. See, it's a good place. And so those little kinds of steps, even to the point where you carry the carrier into the car, you don't do anything. Bring it back in. Then she gets a treat. Good job. Next time, you turn the car on and you don't even go anywhere. So it's those little tiny baby steps that help cats get used to riding in the car. And then, of course, when they get there at the other end, you want to make sure that the veterinarians know that you want them to handle your cat like it's their baby. And so having the cat go right into a quiet exam room, the pheromones that I mentioned for the scratching, there's also one pheromone that's used for anxiety. And that can be placed in the carrier before you go. A lot of veterinarians will use the diffusers. We have them all over our hospital with the plug-in, so that facial calming pheromone is all around. And it's all just about making it friendly, unfearful, cat-friendly handling and experience for your cat from the very beginning when it's at home through the transport to when it gets to the veterinary office.
One of the things that we do, and I totally agree with you on the pheromone feelway, is that we'll have the plugins, but at the beginning of the day for us, we'll get our pile of towels that we'll use on our exam tables, because those stainless steel tables can be a little bit scary and cold. So we'll spray many of them with the pheromone and then have a chance to dissipate some of that scent. It's a little bit strong. And then when the kitty's in there, we'll just kind of throw that over the cat and they go, "Oh, I'm in a hidey spot and this is pretty good."
Yeah, a hidey spot with the ability to escape if they want to, but just taking the visual arousal away helps so much.
Here's another myth now for you, since we're debunking these kitty myths. Cats supposedly aren't as smart as dogs, and I know they go back and forth as to how do you really test their intelligence, and it seems like each one really has their strong points. I've seen cats that are trained. What do you think about teaching your cat a trick? Is there more than just, you know, the parlor game, a reason for doing so?
Oh, sure, because it makes them interact with you. And cats are very trainable. It's so easy to teach your cat to sit just with treats. It's there. It's interested in food. And you just slowly move the treat up above their nose. They're watching it. They're smelling it. Their head goes up and back. And then all of a sudden, their bum goes down and they're sitting. Reward. And with a sit and a treat, and you can clicker train them to do all those things. They can learn to high five. So it's that interaction, that positive reinforcement that's repetitive and in a positive way. Those are the kinds of things that you can do with cats. They're very trainable to make them do what you want them to do, but, you know, so that it's within, comfortable with them.
You're talking about giving them treats, and I know oftentimes we feel so guilty. Your cat's been home all day, you've been working all those hours to earn the cat food money, and you come home or you're about to leave and go, "Here's some treats because I really would like to spend time with you, but I need to work on the computer. So here's some treats," and it makes you feel better because you did something, the cat likes it. But now all of a sudden you realize, my little kitty is now pudgy and is gained weight. How common is obesity in cats? How does a person know, cat owner, know that their cat is obese? And what can they do to get that weight off?
Well, very good point, because you're absolutely right. It's estimated that 40-50% of pet cats are overweight or obese. And it is very common because of the myths that still are across our society that, they'll only eat what they want. Well, I don't think so. they eat what they like, and if it's a bowl full of food, they're going to eat as much as they can. And so at the outset, whether you're preventing weight gain or trying to work with your veterinarian to encourage weight loss, identifying, well, what's the caloric need for my cat relative to its age, its lifestyle, its activity level, and it's going to be maybe 200 kilocalories, give or take, depending on the individual situation. But you have to account for those calories in the treats as well. Some treats only have a calorie or a couple of treats per calorie, and others are all the way up to 7 calories a treat. And if you're like me, where you get sucked into the, hey, cool, sit, do it again, and all of a sudden 10 treats are there before you know it, and that's adding 70 calories of a high caloric treat to a cat's daily needs.
So, and Dr. Brunt, it's so hard because you look at a bag of food or a can of food and says, oh yes, for an adult cat, you're supposed to feed a cup of food a day and you're supposed to do this. It's like, well, that was good if I had an active cat, but I have a couch potato kitty that wants to sit there and trying to get it to chase the laser pointer looks at me like, are you kidding? I'm not going to do this. Or my situation, I have an old girl kitty that I will open up 5 cans of food until I figure out what she wants to eat. She has me well trained. And then my young ones go, oh, look, leftovers.
Mm.
So I'm running that battle of skinny older cat, chunky monkey younger cats. So trying to get them to lose weight, I know some people say, fine, I'm going to put this food down. If you don't like it, fine, don't eat it. But you can't do that with cats. Explain why you can't put a cat on a super strict diet or say eat it or nothing.
Exactly. Cats are particular, and if they don't eat any food for any reason, including they just don't like the taste of it, they won't. And so they can go for days, many days without eating, but it's not good for their system. In fact, we know that cats can develop a very serious condition called fatty liver syndrome or hepatic lipidosis. And that is hard to treat. They can get very ill and even die from a severe case of fatty liver. And so you want to make sure if you're doing any kind of transition of food or having to feed multiple cats with multiple problems, it may be that you just have to feed them separately at separate locations at separate times. And I've got one glutton that I have to, and he knows that when it's feeding time and the other two guys get theirs upstairs, he comes and checks it out, but he gets fed downstairs in the bathroom. And then his portion, which is a half of the smaller cat's portion, gets measured out, and then he stays in the bathroom until they've eaten theirs. So there are ways around that. One of the companies that makes the doors that are trap doors that are microchip activated for cats going in and out have made a feeding bowl that is microchip activated so that the little cover over the food is only activated when the correct cat goes under the arch that has the little scanner. So there are ways preventing obesity, counting calories, making them prey, hunt for their food, possibly putting their dry food, if dry food is part of their portion, which we would like to recommend both some canned and some dry that total up to the calories that they need, but put the dry food in a treat puzzle and make them work for food. That's what they had to do. So you can put the portion in the treat ball and let them bat around it, and then the little kibble will fall out, and then that's how they would get that.
My cats have somewhat trained me, and now I've trained them. They have their little treats. They have a cookie jar in the kitchen, and I'm in there, and they're sitting there looking at me going, food? So I'll get a few, and it's my younger ones that'll do it. I throw a treat one way. They go chasing after it and throw a treat in the other way. So up and down stairs and back and forth. So I figure, oh, well, it's a little exercise. So
Excellent. It's
fun for the two of us or the three of us.
Yes, absolutely. That's terrific. And the other thing, when people are playing with the fishing pole toys or you mentioned the laser pointers, to provide for that normal outlet of prey behavior, they're hunting, play with the, let them chase that red dot. But after a minute or two, toss a little treat or a piece of their kibble down in where one lands so they actually get rewarded for that behavior. They caught that prey. Whoopee.
Got it, finally.
Yes. Munch, munch, munch.
All right, Dr. Brunta, the Catalyst Council, if there is one myth you want to debunk, decoding that cat behavior we haven't spoken about, what would it be?
Well, I think the common myth that my cat looks fine, in reality, they need to see their veterinarian at least once a year. And when they're young and healthy, once a year, fine. But because there are things that happen inside that change them, that affect their life and their comfort, dental disease is so common. Have your veterinarian check out your cat's teeth and treat it before it becomes a problem. You mentioned obesity. That leads to arthritis, and arthritis can happen. It's very common in middle-aged and older cats anyway. Well, your cat may not be a couch potato just because it's decided it's going to be Garfield. It may have arthritis, and it hurts to move around. So that visit with the veterinarian is critical. Make sure if your cat hasn't been this past year to give it the best gift you can and make arrangements for your veterinarian to see your cat.
Fantastic information. Thank you so much. Because I'll always tell people, boy, what does a cat do when it feels good? Sleep. And what does it do when it doesn't feel good? Sleep. So sometimes it's so hard to tell when they're just not feeling good. And so much can happen under that fur. And if it's something that you can do to control, to optimize that quality of life, that's what we all want for our kitties, because we want them to live as long a healthy as life as possible.
Right. And I'll just interject with one quick resource. If your listeners would like to go to catalystcouncil.org, and we have a carrier video, Cats and Carriers, Friends, Not Foes, Five Simple Steps to Creating a Cat-Friendly Carrier. So that's on our website, catalystcouncil.org, and happy catting.
Happy catting, and when you get a cat, remember cats are like potato chips. You can't have just one.
Exactly.
Thank you so much, Dr. Brunt, for being with us today. This is Dr. Bernadine Cruz. You've been listening to The Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio. Thank you very much, Mark Winter, for doing an awesome job of editing and always coming through for me when I don't exactly get my scheduling correct. So please listen again next week when we'll be talking to another expert on pet care, allowing you to be the best possible pet owner. Thanks for listening. Take care.
Pets can be a wonderful addition to your life because they're a member of the family. Keeping them healthy and happy is important. Pet Life Radio presents The Pet Doctor with veterinary media consultant and veterinarian Dr. Bernadine Cruz. Whether you have a dog, cat, reptile, or rabbit, you'll find answers for your pets straight from the vets. The Pet Doctor, on demand every week, only on PetLifeRadio.com.